Hello and welcome to Cavaganzers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and very happy to be here on a Monday. It always feels so good to be back in front of the microphone talking to some of the smartest people in the world about the most important stuff in the world. The most important stuff, of course, being the Trinity, our faith, the resurrection of the Lord, the moral life. And today we focus on life itself. We're going to do one of our Why Are You Pro-Choice shows. So we ask that the callers only be pro-choice people. And I don't think it comes to as a surprise to anybody. And if it does come as a surprise to you, I hope you will reconsider that because so many pro-choice people listen to this program because folks of all kinds like to listen to the talk of faith, talk of God, and measure it against their own experiences. We're delighted to have the audience of atheists we have, agnostics that we have, all kinds of folks that we have. And we know that we have a large pro-choice audience as well, and we welcome them and we love conversation with them. And so this is their chance to call and tell us why they're pro-choice. So if you're a pro-choice person, the number is 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. And our guest, of course, is the man who wrote the book called Persuasive Pro-Life, Trent Horn. Hello, Trent.
Hello, Cy.
You feel ready to talk to some pro-choice people today?
Yes, I hope they'll certainly call in. One thing that just occurred to me, though, when you asked for the show, was there anything on my mind that relates to pro-life? I think that there's a lot of conversations people are having now about the value of human life. If you think about it, when we're dealing with the issue of this pandemic, the question is, what lengths will we go to protect a human life? When is it worthwhile to do this? What lengths are appropriate? What lengths are excessive? What are proportional? What are disproportional? But I believe that a very appropriate and proportional length we ought to go for any human life is to make it illegal to directly kill that human life. I think that's quite obvious for any human being, regardless of how old or young they are. Now, there's people who disagree with me because my view entails we ought to make it illegal to directly kill the unborn through abortion. So I think if many people now have on their minds, including those who would try to say pro-lifers have been inconsistent lately, I would say that those on the other end who have vigorously argued for state interventions and lockdowns to protect human life, yet see no need to protect human life in the womb, I would say that's a very gross inconsistency, one that deserves a conversation about.
And that's why we're holding the phones for you if you're pro-choice. For our Catholic pro-life friends, if you would just hold on for another day, give us an opportunity to have these conversations because they are very important conversations. And you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I do feel, I hope not inordinate, but I do feel a little bit of pride in the fact that we do this because there's not that many places in media where you can just get an honest conversation about issues like abortion, issues like euthanasia, suicide, issues like the treatment of the disabled, including in some ways the euthanasia and suicide debate is a debate about how to treat the disabled. We just don't have that many honest conversations about this. We have a lot of people talking past one another. And so I think that's part of why pro-choice people feel comfortable to call too. If you are a pro-choice person and you're not familiar with us, Trent and I are both entirely pro-life. Me for emotional reasons, Trent for intellectual reasons. Well, that's probably not exactly accurate, but
I am one of those heartless pro-lifers that's only following my programming.
Oh, you're following your programming. All right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'd love to have those conversations with you. We're always grateful when you call. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Nick, we got to take some signs down here in the studio because when we're doing the pledge drive last week, they put up the pledge number literally everywhere in the studio. So that's true. Can't look anywhere without seeing it. They don't want me to forget the number. So now
why don't they just make you glasses with a visor?
Yeah, with
like
the right in front of me, it would just be floating.
You
out
wouldn't
there.
Need to put it all over the studio. You could just have it hanging from the brim of your visor.
Yeah, I should do that. I should get a pledge drive visor. So 888-318-7884, the number 888-318-7884. You're right that this is a time when we're talking about life issues more, and there's a certain way in which I think. You never want to say that like, oh, hey, this pandemic is great, but things have good and bad consequences. Even bad things often have, you know, side consequences that are good. Even good things often have side consequences that are bad. So I think this conversation about life is actually really good. I am always impressed with the governor of New York, Mr. Cuomo, when he talks quite fiercely about we don't want to lose anybody, and it's a tragedy to lose everybody, and each life is precious, and we it's worth our efforts. And then I think, but this is a guy who like literally celebrated a bill that would allow killing children right up to the moment of birth.
Right until birth, yeah.
Like that seems to me a tremendous disconnect. And maybe he'll repent of that, given that he's got this newfound reverence for life.
Here's the other disconnect that I've noticed, Cy, when it comes to those who defend legal abortion and have conversations about lockdowns and combating this pandemic. That those who defend lockdowns will say, rightly so, we ought to protect human life. You know, we should protect human beings. Human life is valuable. It's precious. And critics of lockdowns will say, that's good, but what you're proposing could cause human suffering in its own right. Or at the very least, it could be economically burdensome to others to protect human lives. And then the defenders of the lockdowns will say, we shouldn't put a price tag on human lives, even if it's very economically burdensome, even if it's even people lose their jobs, even if these bad things happen, it is worth it to protect human lives. And yet, Cy, this just seems like such a bizarro world, because I can imagine on this show 6 months ago having a conversation about abortion, and the other person online will say, yeah, I know abortion is bad, but do you want some girl to grow up in poverty, or do you want someone to be kicked out of school? So it's just so strange to me that before this pandemic is happening, people will defend the direct killing of the unborn because protecting the unborn would lead to economic and social hardships for some people. And yet those very same people will defend tremendous social and economic hardships to protect others from indirectly being killed by the spread of a disease.
Right.
So it just seems like there's a massive disconnect on that point, you know, where before pro-life advocates are accused of being these fetal obsessed persons who don't care about life after birth. And now there, you know, some pro-life advocates who say the lockdowns are too much are said that you put profits before people. So it's like, well, which is it here? Rather, it seems to be you only seem to care about life after it's born rather than before. And maybe you have a legitimate reason to say, well, it's not really human life before birth. But we can talk about that.
Yes. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, but only if you are a pro-choice person. I want to be clear about what we mean by a pro-choice person. If you're a person who believes that, you know, suicide is acceptable sometimes, well, then you believe we'll put you in the pro-choice category, because if you're making some situations where you think suicide's all right, that's somebody who doesn't believe that isn't fully pro-life, at least in our way of understanding. And I'm not trying to say any of this to be pejorative or anything. I'm just trying to be descriptive, so you know, because I want someone to know, like, well, I don't believe in abortion in the last trimester, but I do in the first two trimesters. Does that make me pro-choice? Yes, that makes you pro-choice. I believe that you should be able to have an abortion in the first, you know, 2 weeks of pregnancy. Well, that's still pro-choice. So we'd like you to feel free to give us a call, 888-318-7884. If, on the other hand, you don't believe in legalized abortion at any stage, if you don't believe in taking the lives of the vulnerable or the sick or the disabled directly at any stage, that makes you a pro-life person, and you'll have to just enjoy the show today and enjoy the conversation. 888-318-7884, the number. I think I'm going to go to the break first, Nick, and then we'll come back and we'll start taking calls. So callers, if you'll just hang on a couple minutes, we will be right back to take your calls on this day where we ask, why are you pro-choice?
We're waiting for your call. Grab that line and get on board. Prayer is an opportunity to spend quality time with God. So pray from the heart. Let God know you trust Him, believe in Him, and most of all, that you love Him. My favorite prayer that I say many times a day is, Jesus, I trust in you. It is simple, but as we know from St. Faustina, it reaches His heart.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
You know what's easy to deliver to you right now in this time of the virus? Digital stuff. So in order to get more digital stuff out there to folks, you know, magazines, books, all that kind of stuff you can listen to, they've got sales going on at shop.catholic.com. We've got a new digital book deal offering five titles for $25. They've packaged digital copies of the magazine so you can get past issues for less than $10 a year, or 8 years worth of digital issues for just $39.95. So just visit the ebook and magazine section at shop.catholic.com today. Shop.catholic.com and get your digital materials at great deals. Trent Horn is our guest, the author of many books, including Answering Atheism, Why We're Catholic, and Persuasive Pro-Life. He'll be taking the pro-life position today. You will, right? You're committed to that? You're not gonna switch on us?
I am very committed to that. Though right. Sometimes when I teach other people to defend the pro-life position, I will take the pro-choice position as a devil's advocate, kind of workshop experience for them. Sometimes actually when I go and speak at conferences, it's always fun when I'm there with other pro-life advocates like Stephanie Gray, for example, if we're at the same conference. We actually wanted to do this at the Students for Life conference, but it didn't work out this year, so maybe next year. We wanted to speak about, get up and do a mock conversation on abortion and just flip a coin and then just decide on the spot who would be pro-life and who would be pro-choice.
Oh, cool.
Based on that, because each of us have spoken with these advocates for a very long time, and so we can almost articulate their position better than they can. So
it would be interesting to hear if some pro-choice folks articulate the pro-life position. I wonder if there are many who can do so well. I mean, I suppose
only a few.
Probably not that many pro-life people who can do the opposite. Although you and Stephanie could. She's a superstar. She's great. A wonderful pro-life person. Mm-hmm. I got her up there with you, Trent.
She's probably one of the only people around that I would have fill in for me when it comes to especially doing like a debate, for example, or a pro-life talk. But especially if I had a debate, I would have Steph fill in for me in a second.
And you know what? She's so smart and so good at what she does, and she's Canadian. Let's go to Daniel right now in Ironton, Ohio. Daniel, why are you pro-choice?
So I guess the hardest part for me when I talk to my buddies and things about this situation is where everybody draws their lines. Mm. So I guess I wanted to talk to you guys about that is,
sure.
Does pro-choice start at contraceptive? Does it start at when there's a heartbeat or when there's a positive pregnancy test? Or, I mean, can you be pro-life in any of those circumstances or, you know, when women have rape cases and things like that? I guess it's hard for me when we're debating with my buddies. How do you draw the line of where am I pro-choice? It appears a lot of them say basically all that. If you're any of those, then you're pro-choice. Mm-hmm. If if it's after that, after contraceptive or something like that, then you would be pro-life, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Sure, Daniel. First, I'd say the term pro-life, there's not a universally agreed upon definition of the term. It's not a term that the Magisterium of the Catholic Church uses, for example. It's more of a social term or a political term that's used to describe people who are opposed to legal abortion in varying forms. So people who identify as pro-life are going to have different views, just as people who identify as pro-choice are going to have different views. My personal definition of pro-life that I think is the most coherent is that pro-life means that you believe every human being has a right to life, and that every human being, every biological human being, has a legal right to life that ought to be protected. And if that human being is not protected under the law, they ought to be protected. So that definition of pro-life would mean that it is wrong to directly kill a human being at any stage of their development. And then we would just ask, okay, when does the development of the human being begin? And if you look at the question from a strict biological standpoint, it's abundantly clear that the development of every biological human being begins at conception. For me, I mean, I could cite embryologists and textbooks, but I just make a very simple argument. From my friend Steve Wagner puts it this way: if it's growing, it's got to be alive. If it has human parents, it's got to be human. Human beings like you and me are valuable. And a little embryo or fetus, they're not like a clump of cells. They're a whole body because they can grow and develop into a mature member of a species. That's something that sperm can't do, egg can't do. So there are people, Daniel, who identify as pro-life who are in favor of contraception. There are non-Catholic pro-life advocates who are in favor of contraception. It's not a position that I would endorse, the church would endorse, but there are pro-lifers who hold that view. But I would say to be pro-life, you have to say that every single human being has a right to life. So then we have to ask, well, what's a human being? I would say a human being is any member of our species. So if you look at the words embryo and fetus, in medical textbooks, they say when it comes to human beings, a fetus is a human being from the 8th week of life until birth, and an embryo is a human being from conception until the 8th week of life. So I think we should treat all human beings equally, whether they're embryos, fetuses, infants, toddlers, and so on. So that's probably where I would put it. Does that make sense, or do you have another question to follow up, or?
I guess it does make sense to me, but the thing that I'm always wondering about is we always talk about the heartbeat bills, and everybody, you know, pro-lifers want to get these heartbeat bills passed.
Sure.
And like you're saying, I would believe if you were pro-life that you would believe that as soon as you're pregnant at the moment, then that would be the moment you would be arguing for. So is that more about politics, the whole heartbeat thing?
Yes, Daniel, I believe that does relate to politics. So we have to remember, one must not make the perfect the enemy of the good. Even if you go to Pope St. John Paul II's encyclical, The Gospel of Life, in there, I think it's around paragraph 73, the Pope talks about how it is acceptable to advocate for abortion laws that restrict abortion, that are less than ideal, provided that your goal is to reduce the evil of abortion as much as you can. So it doesn't really do the unborn any good if you try to pass a law that just won't be passed. If a majority of people in a democratic republic like ours, if a majority of people don't support a law, it will end up getting repealed, it won't pass, or the legislators that do pass it will lose their seats and be replaced with people who will just repeal the law. So I think that a lot of pro-life advocates try to pass heartbeat bills, which would outlaw abortion after a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is about 4 or 5 weeks into a pregnancy when it can be detected, maybe up to 6 or 7 weeks, but around that early time in the first trimester. I think, Daniel, the reason they pick that is because many pro-choice advocates will say, if you try to outlaw abortion, outlaw killing a human being, even from conception, you're going to try to outlaw birth control too. And I think as a practical feature, a lot of pro-life advocates don't want to make it seem like they're trying to outlaw birth control, because while there are a fair number of people in this country who want abortion to be illegal. I mean, 25% of people in this country want it totally or almost illegal. But there's way more people who support contraception than support abortion. So a favorite tactic of pro-choice advocates is to make it seem like, hey, these pro-lifers are going to take your birth control away. So if you say, look, this law says if you can detect a fetal heartbeat, you can't perform an abortion, that would save hundreds of thousands of lives of unborn children. At least 90% of abortions would be illegal. It wouldn't touch on contraception that a lot of people out there support. So you would save lives, and you would progress towards the good. And I think that also saying it's a heartbeat bill, it instills in people. They say, oh, wait, a fetus is a heartbeat? An embryo has a heartbeat? They start to see, wait, this isn't a clump of cells. It's a living human being. It's got a beating heart like I do. And it serves an educational aspect as well. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's basically me and my buddies debate this kind of thing all the time. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's where we all kind of hit a brick wall is, well, if I'm pro-choice, at what moment do we determine that you're pro-choice? Because if you're saying that it's an embryo, anytime after that, it can still be aborted. But for me, the hard thing for me is, I would consider myself pro-choice. But then if I think about, a baby in the third trimester getting that seems really bad to me. And then the way you said biologically, an embryo is basically still alive in the same thing, but for some reason it seems softer to... I mean, I know that's a horrible way of explaining it, but...
Well, Daniel, I think I think I see where you're coming from, Daniel. I mean, when you think of a third trimester baby, a third trimester fetus in your mind, I'm sure you probably think it just looks like a miniature version of the Gerber baby, right? Arms and legs and little button nose and eyes. I'm sure a third trimester fetus just looks like a mini baby, right? In your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes it, the thought of killing such a being is abhorrent to you. I would just caution you not to tie your affinity for the unborn or your desire to protect them to merely how they look. How we look doesn't determine our value. There's a lot of mannequins and robots that look like people, but they're not people. And then as you go back in time, in development, an unborn child, although I would tell you, go look up now ultrasound 12-week fetus, 10-week fetus. It's going to look like a miniature version of a third trimester fetus to you. Even when you go back to 4 or 5 weeks where you can't really discern a lot of human traits, the fact of the matter is it's still a human being. It's just in the process of developing. An analogy I like to use comes from Richard Stith. Do you remember Polaroid cameras, Daniel? Like Polaroid pictures? They're starting to come back now.
Daniel? Polaroids?
Dan, you there?
Yeah, where you shake them and they...
Yeah, shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Actually, Fujifilm has come out to say, do not shake it like a Polaroid. They're extremely mad at Outkast about that.
Oh.
You are not actually supposed to shake it. They had press release and everything. But if you remember, Daniel, if you just have a Polaroid picture, you took the Polaroid picture, and the instant it snapped, you know, you looked at it, and it was just a brown smudge. It looked like a brown smudge. It didn't look like anything. But it was a picture of whatever you took. And if it was a picture of something rare or famous, it'd be really valuable to you. Even though it doesn't look like it yet, it's there. It just hasn't developed enough for you to recognize it. And it's the same for the unborn. When they're just a few weeks old in the womb and they're just, they are a bunch of cells. We're a bunch of cells. But when they're a collection of cells, we have a hard time emotionally connecting. They're there. And you won't recognize them more until they develop more, but it's fully there, just like how a Polaroid picture is fully there. It just needs to develop a bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right,
so
thank you.
Let's go down the... Oh, you're going to go ahead and cut me off. That's fine.
No,
Daniel,
no.
Go ahead.
You
that's
what,
fine.
Daniel,
I didn't realize you had more, but I... You know what? Now I do kind of... I want to cut him off now.
Cy Kellett. I'm not even going to think of a thought experiment where you have to meet a fatal end at this point.
Okay,
this show
right.
is ripe for them.
Well, we got a couple minutes.
Yeah,
go
we
ahead.
Got a couple minutes,
go
Daniel.
Ahead, Daniel.
Go right ahead.
So I guess if we go down the road of where I kind of sit on it, too, is when you start talking about the well-being of the mother and maybe complications she's having with her pregnancy or maybe, maybe it was a rape case or something like that. And then, sometimes pro-life people will say, well, there's adoption choices and things like that. But for me, that seems like a really, a choice for the mother to make on whether she can provide a good life for that child. And I know part of me says that adoption is an option, but then we have so many kids in adoption now that also seems like a sticky situation as well.
Let me offer two thoughts on that, Daniel. First, on a practical level, the children that we have a hard time placing in adoption now are usually in community adoption or foster care. And they're there, they're held in a kind of legal limbo because the parental rights of their own parents who were deemed unfit by the courts, maybe they're drug addicts, for example, or criminals, haven't been terminated. So they can't be adopted legally. Or they're older, they have behavioral issues, mental health issues, and many people aren't willing to adopt older children in community foster care who many of them were wanted. They were from intended pregnancies. I will tell you that any infant that is put up for adoption today can be placed almost instantaneously. The wait to adopt a child, the average wait time is like somewhere around 5 to 10 years in the United States. That's why so many couples who want to adopt infants in the U.S. try to go overseas to do it. A baby in this country can be placed almost instantly. But second, I would say that when it comes to adoption, it's a heroic thing, but parents have an obligation to support their child and care for them. Even if no one else is available, they have to do it. They can place a child with someone else, but if no one's available, they have to do that. They need to care for their child, whether they're in a rural area and have to wait a few weeks for someone to come to retrieve the child, or if with pregnancy, only the biological mother can care for the child in pregnancy. So she and the father has to have a duty to that child. I tell you what, Daniel, why don't you stay on the line, give us your email address. I'll send you a copy of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life. It's my full treatment on the issue of abortion, and I think you may find it to be helpful and interesting. So do stay
hang on the line there, Daniel. Thank you. 888-318-7884, our number here. 888-318-7884. You are listening to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest. Trent, the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, is a pro-life person himself. As a matter of fact, an advocate for the pro-life position. But we invite you, if you are a pro-choice person today, we've set 2 hours aside for pro-choice people to make their case. 888-318-7884. If you have a reason why you are pro-choice and you'd like to share it with us, we would love to hear it. We'd love to discuss it with you. 888-318-7884.
In what forms does the Word of God come to us? How do we know that the Bible is inspired, inerrant, and complete? Why do we need tradition to help us understand Scripture? Doesn't the Bible teach that it alone is sufficient for salvation? In 20 Answers, Scripture and Tradition, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, examining the first and most important issue in the Christian faith, the manner in which God has communicated to us the saving truths of the gospel. 20 Answers, Scripture and Tradition is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Every Catholic has heard the challenge. How can you believe that? Don't you know the Bible says? It's a challenge we have to meet. If we can't reconcile apparent contradictions between Scripture and Catholic teaching, how can our faith survive? And if we can't answer our Protestant brothers and sisters, how will they ever come to embrace the fullness of the faith? In Meeting the Protestant Challenge, apologist Carlo Broussard gives you the knowledge and tools you need to answer 50 of the most common Bible-based objections to Catholicism. Be prepared to give an answer. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Challenge today by calling 844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Does the problem of evil keep you from believing in God?
Join us for Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is in studio with me. Our number, 888-318-7884. It's a chance for pro-choice people to call and let us know why you are pro-choice. We really think that the conversation is productive. We genuinely think the conversation is productive. We don't try to just win arguments or crush people here. We try to hear your points and have the conversation because we don't think anybody else is really having the conversation. You never turn on CNN and they're having a legitimate, actual conversation about what the science says, about what philosophy says, or even a legitimate conversation about what religions and religious people have to say about life. They would rather just do the kind of the horse race stuff. You know, there's this many pro-life Supreme Court justices and that many pro-choice, or this many pro-life congressmen and this many pro-choice congressmen, and that kind of lazy reporting instead of actually getting into what is actually going on and having a conversation about the meaning of these things. And we want to have that conversation here. 888-318-7884 is the number to call. 888-318-7884. I do want to share, just before I go back to the phones, from Brad off the air. Are you willing to compromise on contraception so that fewer abortions have to happen?
It depends what Brad means by that. Are you willing to compromise on contraception so that fewer abortions have to happen? I'm not sure what he means by that. I'm definitely not going to promote the evil of contraception in order to merely reduce the number of abortions that take place. That would be like saying, would you be willing to promote violent pornography if it was shown there was a causal link that it reduced the number of rapes that occur?
Yeah.
I would say that, well, no, because one ought not do evil so that good may come from it. And I'm also skeptical, just like I would be skeptical of the use of violent pornography to reduce rapes. I'm skeptical about the use of contraception to reduce abortions. It may be that there is a statistical link there, but once again, we shouldn't do evil so that good may come from it. I also worry, as Pope St. John Paul II said, that contraception creates a kind of culture of death or an anti-parenthood mentality, so that it inoculates within people the idea. Well, William May and other Catholic moral theologians have put forward an argument against contraception, saying contraception is wrong because it's anti-life. That while it does not take the life of a human being, it does express a profoundly anti-life attitude towards a human being who would come into existence. So I just wonder, if we're promoting this attitude, how good is that going to be for the children who do come into existence? It reminds me, Sai, once I was at a university, Colorado University in Boulder. So CU Boulder, a bastion of incredibly responsible people. No, there are good people at CU Boulder, very smart professors there I've engaged with. But every year, they're known for a ritual of engaging in herbal relaxation, as we'll call it.
Oh,
yes,
that's like a school thing?
School
activity?
It's something they did a lot every April 20th. And I remember I was there around this time period to do a pro-life outreach, and I talked to a young man, and he chastised me for being at this pro-life outreach on CU Boulder, and said, if you're here against abortion, why aren't you passing out condoms so people don't get pregnant? And so what I said to him, just quickly to divert the subject, because I didn't want to get to debate contraception at that moment, I said, well, why should I? At the University Health Center, there's a bowl of condoms there for free for any student who wants to go get them. And he said, I shouldn't have to walk all the way to the campus health center to get condoms. And I'm thinking, if you are not responsible enough to walk 200 yards to get condoms, how responsible could you possibly be as an individual for a child you bring into existence? So it's mind-boggling to me that how are we promoting a solution here when we're just creating an entirely new problem? The goal of pro-life is not to reduce abortions per se. It is, indirectly. The goal is for abortions to be reduced because people recognize it as a moral tragedy and evil that ought to be outlawed and then avoided as much as possible. That's what pro-lifers are trying to express. And so what I tell people when they say, well, why aren't you for contraception? I'll reply this way sometimes, Sai. How does me giving someone birth control, contraceptives, how does that facilitate my mission, which is to instill an attitude in them that they don't want to kill the unborn?
Yeah, right.
My mission is not to reduce abortions per se. I do want them to be reduced, absolutely. Well, my primary mission is for abortion to be outlawed because people realize abortion is wrong. It's a crime. So how does me giving someone contraceptives, at best, it does nothing to help it. At worst, it hinders it. That's how I feel.
Brad, thank you for that. A whole bunch of folks on the line. Don't worry. We're going to work our way to all of you. Thank you so much for your calls. It's always an opportunity for pro-choice people to tell us why they are pro-choice today. Why are you pro-choice is our question for each caller. 888-318-7884, the number. Alex in West Virginia, why are you pro-choice? Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Alex. You're on the air. Why are you pro-choice? Hi.
Well, I think it's a good avenue to take for women who have no other options to go through. Because the thing, I think something that people don't talk about in the argument is the fact that it costs, a good few thousand dollars to have a child. You know, even if you put it up for adoption, you still have to pay the hospital, several thousand dollars just to have the child. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, a smaller fee for the abortion, I think it would be a much, much easier option on a family who probably couldn't afford to raise the child themselves.
Okay, so Alex, your defense of legal abortion is you're saying that abortion ought to be legal because choosing to not abortion entails financial costs, like paying to place a child for, taking care of a child, raising them, even placing them for adoption. There are some costs that are involved. Though I would say the costs involved for placing a child for adoption are incurred primarily, if not absolutely, by the couple who is adopting the child, not the birth mother who is placing the child. But even if you were correct, I don't think that works with abortion. I'm just curious. We don't have to go down this road if you don't fall into this mindset. But do you think it's worthwhile right now, because we're dealing with this pandemic, do you think it's worthwhile for the government to establish these shelter-in-place orders to keep people from dying from COVID-19, even if it costs people money and some people might lose their jobs and things like that?
Well, to be honest, the shelter-in-place order, I think, is poorly executed. I think they could have figured out a way to severely optimize the way, everyone's having to stay at home. I don't think that's a good option. I think, people who've already had the virus, they have the antibodies. They're immune to the virus once they've had it and recovered.
Okay, well, here, I don't want to, Alex, the only reason I brought that up, I was just curious, because Cy and I were mentioning about some people who are super duper gung-ho about the lockdowns, even if it results in economic problems for people. So I was just curious if you're in that camp, but I see you're not. So let me then continue on with this, with your reasoning here. I have a problem with this. What's hard for me is because what I hear with the argument, because when you say things like a woman shouldn't be forced to have a child, I agree with that. I agree that nobody should be forced to become pregnant. Nobody should be raped. Because for me, the phrase have a child refers to conception. But my thing is, if you are pregnant, you already have a child. So you can't say, well, I'm allowed to end my child's life because if I were to let this child continue living, it would cost me money. I would say parents have an obligation to take care of their children and not directly end their lives. So that's the crux for me, which is hard. I agree with you. No one should be forced to become pregnant. But just as you can't kill a two-year-old just because you don't want to go through everything involved with placing them for adoption or raising them, I don't think you should do the same to an unborn child. They're just younger and smaller, and we should treat them the same. Does that make sense? Do you see where I'm at least coming from?
I see your reasoning, but what do you say to the crackhead who couldn't raise a child and probably doesn't know how to put a child up for adoption, and would probably give the child some brain damage, and sure, it wouldn't be able to live a full life anyway? What would you say to that?
Well, Alex, let me respond to that hypothetical with another one. Now, I grew up in the Southwest, and there's a lot of meth labs, stuff like that. And I've heard stories of parents being arrested who run meth labs who have kids there, like toddlers, that are already addicted to methamphetamines or already been poisoned by it. So, let's take your person who is addicted to crack cocaine or a meth addict. What if they had, a toddler? And imagine that toddler's already addicted to crack cocaine, the toddler's already addicted to meth, the toddler's not going to get adopted, they're going to be in community foster care for years and years and years till they go out on the streets and probably end up doing drugs. And I know this will sound like a ridiculous proposal, but just humor me here. What do you think if people said, look, this toddler, this two-year-old child of this crack addict or this meth head, this two-year-old child's got no future ahead of him. Maybe we should just pump him full of morphine, let him die, send him to God. That's that. Do you think it'd be wrong to kill a two-year-old child of a crack addict or a meth head for that reason?
Well, I think to send them to heaven would be a good thing, if they're not going to have a good time here on earth.
Alex, let's rewind a bit. So you're saying it'd be okay to kill a two-year-old who is in an abusive situation?
I wouldn't say kill them. I would say, peacefully send them to heaven, with the morphine and, make it peaceful for them.
But Alex, let me hear what you just said. So if they're you're talking about they're alive and we make them dead, what's that called?
Well, that's called murder, but I wouldn't be murdering them. It would be sending them to heaven into the afterlife where they would be, received by God and, forgiven for their sin.
Okay,
and that would be a much better thing instead.
Well,
but the way they get there is you have to murder them first.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems pretty clear. You can't send a person to heaven without murdering them.
Alex, would you agree we shouldn't kill born people to send them to heaven? I think you agree, right? People like you or me?
Sure.
Okay.
But I mean, they would still, you know, go to heaven, and their life in heaven would be eternal and, you know, far better than their life on
Earth. Well, let me give you an example. I mean, Cy Kellett here is a super holy guy. I'm sure if somebody walked in and killed him, he would probably go to heaven. Cy is my co-host here sitting yes. right next to me.
Right. Straight there.
Cy would probably go straight there. He's yep. a super holy guy.
No problem.
But it'd be wrong for someone to kill Cy Kellett,
yes,
right?
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Yeah. So I guess what I would say there, and we'll have to move on here, Alex, just as it'd be wrong to kill Cy or me or a two-year-old, we get into a really, really, really dangerous situation when we say it's okay to kill people if they're suffering or they're having a difficult life. Because then when that's the case, there's nowhere to stop on that slippery slope. That was the mentality behind the Nazi Holocaust, started that way with the euthanization and killing of disabled people. Other Holocausts and brutalities throughout history have started with, well, we think it's okay to kill people if, when you start with that mindset, and you see, it just doesn't stay with abortion. That's why when I talk to people about this who bring up these pragmatic arguments for abortion, such as children who are in abusive situations, the logic naturally flows to the born. And so you either have to honestly accept it or come up with an ad hoc rationale to partition off born children from unborn children of this regard. My response is to say we ought to treat them equally.
Alex, thank you for the call. I have to say, you probably call me a communist or a socialist for saying this, but one thing that Alex started this call with, something that I actually feel sympathetic to, that a woman gets pregnant and she goes and has the baby, even if she gives it up to it for adoption, it's going to cost her a lot of money. I feel like society should take care of the cost of hospitalization for having a baby. I feel like we could do that. We could afford that instead of charging the mom.
Maybe we should just all do it at home. You just fill up the kiddie pool. I mean,
well,
you know,
thank you for not calling me a socialist, but I still don't feel like you took my idea seriously, because I am trying to find some common ground with Alex, and he.
Well, I think that we should provide means to help people to have children and to not, for example, over medicalize childbirth.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
but for me, when we get to the point where parents aren't expected to provide their children, I think that sometimes I agree with you, Cy, that we should. I would look at this, if we're looking at it from an economic perspective. And if you want more Catholic economic perspectives, I actually just wrote a new book called "Can a Catholic Be a Socialist?"
Yeah, but and the answer is no.
The answer is
no. I thought you were going to call me a socialist, but you didn't.
No,
but see, I'm saying like
no.
Like
I would
society,
tell you would
you
be
say
a
that parents
side.
Are responsible for the kids, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
But we want every child educated, yeah. So we pay for public school. Now, okay, well, whatever we might want to say about public school,
and I don't say government schools.
Why can't we just
see my language here? I call them government schools. I don't even say government schools. They're not socialist. It would be socialist if government outlawed education and said everybody had to go to a quote-unquote public school.
But what if moms didn't have to worry about the cost?
What
so she gets pregnant and it's like, well, one thing you don't have to worry about is the government or society.
Or paying to deliver a child?
Yeah, get the baby delivered.
Well, what I would say is this. That is a prudential question about who... I will say this. There is a cost for delivering children. It is a medical procedure. There is a cost... And Catholics can reasonably disagree about how that cost ought to be paid. But it has to be paid. You have to pay for the equipment. You have
yeah,
to pay
yeah,
for the
right.
doctors.
There's no free lunch.
There isn't. So we have the question is, why? Who should be expected to pay for that? Why is it the case that we would expect parents to pay? Should then we then say parents aren't expected to pay for other pediatric types of interventions? How does that work? How does health insurance work? It does get into larger questions. I personally would be more apt for proposals that drive down the cost of delivering children.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, because for me, it's interesting when we get into these debates, and we'll get back to here to our pro-choice friends and callers here shortly. When we get into questions about helping the poor and impoverished, for example, I find that many people propose entitlement programs, and they do serve their purpose in some cases. But I find that some people don't understand that one way to attack poverty is to provide people with funds and resources. But another way to deal with the problem of poverty is to drive down the cost of things so that it is cheaper for the poor to be able to purchase them. For example, one reason poverty dropped in the United States, you know, you go back 100 years. 100 years ago, of average family's budget, half of it was spent on food. Food was expensive. Clothes were expensive.
Right, right.
But now the average family income for food is like 13%. So,
well, I've something to think about. 100 years ago, you could almost no one could afford a TV.
Yeah, but the most popular thing people were buying, cornstarch.
Lots of cornstarch.
I mean, you could, you just watch the cornstarch. You couldn't get the TV, but you could watch,
you
the cornstarch.
You watch corn the corn grow and get cornstarch.
All right, we'll be right back with more. Listen, we're open only for callers who are pro-choice. I realize there are callers on the line. I just wanted to engage in that conversation a little bit for Alex's benefit, because Alex, we appreciate the call, even though we disagree with about sending little babies to heaven with morphine. We do appreciate the call.
And we are against injecting kids with poison and murdering them, as I think most of our callers also are.
But that doesn't
mean it's all how you describe it. It's right. All you gotta. It's all about the language we've seen.
So if you're a pro-choice person and you'd like to argue your points with us or share with us the reason why you are pro-choice, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Next time on EWTN Live, Tufik Bellini shares how the nonprofit In Defense of Christians advocates for religious freedom and protection in the Middle East on the next EWTN Live.
EWTN Live with me, Father Mitch Packwell, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN TV and radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, trying to find common ground with every caller. It's our number 888-318-7884. However, there are some things that, look, let's be honest, we can't find common ground on. We just don't agree about them. But it's worth having the conversation so that we can continue to try to help each other move forward. We're reasonable creatures. Most of us are. And it's good to have these conversations. So we're completely holding the lines open for pro-choice people today. If you're a pro-choice person, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Our guest is Trent Horn. Trent is the author of Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? That's his latest book. But also the author of Answering Atheism, Why We're Catholic, Persuasive Pro-Life, and vocal advocate for life and the dignity of life in all of its stages. Again, 888-318-7884. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour and next are for you. Let's go to Zachary in Atlanta, Georgia. Zachary, your question for Trent. Oh, no, Zachary, I'm supposed to ask you, why are you pro-choice? What's up with the phones? Is Zachary there?
Mr. Zachary?
Zachary in Georgia? No? All right. This happens every time we go to the phones today. I don't know exactly what's going on.
We have his question written here. We could always take that. Maybe we can get him on the line later.
888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. The idea that... I don't want to pick on our last caller, but it does seem to me eliding certain basic moral facts to say, well, we're not murdering the child, we're just sending the child to heaven. Oh, it's just like we're glossing over an important step here. Like, I always felt like that was the case in the embryonic research debate, was like, we're going to use these cells. Well, yeah, but you're using the cells of what? Well, of a human embryo. Well, how are you getting those cells? We're just gathering the cell. Well, no, you're not saying the thing that you're doing.
Right.
You have to kill the embryonic human being before you can use the cells. Like, you have to say... And not saying one of the steps is...
This is what we call, double speak. It's derived from Newspeak of 1984. George Orwell's book, 1984, is a perfect example of this. That notice what our previous caller had to do and other callers do and other people do when they defend legal abortion is they have to twist
the English language into such pretzels that you have to send the dictionary to a chiropractor, that it's completely just bent out of shape of what it means in order to get it to sound right. Orwell, he wrote a article about this a long time ago, and in it he was chastising Western journalists for using these kinds of euphemisms to cover up what the Soviet Union was doing. Because a lot of Western journalists were totally infatuated with Soviet-style communism, especially in the 1930s through the 1950s, before the system really started collapsing. They thought, this is great. We have to really support this. And they glossed over the gross human rights abuses. This is what Orwell wrote. George Orwell, author of 1984. Millions of peasants are robbed of their farms and sent trudging along the roads with no more than they can carry. This is called transfer of population or rectification of frontiers. People are imprisoned for years without trial or shot in the back of the neck or sent to die of scurvy in Arctic lumber camps. This is called elimination of unreliable elements. Such phraseology is needed if one wants to name things without calling up mental pictures of them. So that is what happens with abortion here, that even people don't want to say, well, it's not killing, it's quote unquote sending to heaven, which would be which in the case of a baptized 2-year-old child, they would be going to heaven. That is true, but
they would be utterly deprived of their life,
of the life
that God intended for them.
And I'm sure that child would mourn the sin you had committed to send them to heaven, that our life is a gift from God and we do not have, he is the one who has authority over human life. We don't.
Let's go to Lindsay. Lindsay, I'm not exactly sure where you are. That's fine. Why are you pro-choice, Lindsay?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so nervous.
Oh, well, you're very welcome here. Our listeners, all 30 million of them are completely friendly. So you're perfectly fine.
Piece of cake.
Yeah.
All right.
Go right ahead.
Well, I'd like to share, first of all, that I don't necessarily believe that abortion is right. Mm-hmm. I think that we can all agree that any person in that position has a number of really, really difficult choices ahead of them. I think that no
matter
what...
You mean the
mom?
Not the baby.
Or the mom and the dad. Mm.
Well, Lindsay, could I ask could I ask you a question? I think I agree with you. Someone who is pregnant, who did not intend to be pregnant, they do have difficult choices. We could boil it down to two. One would be not having an abortion. It involves a lot of sacrifice to care for a child, to either raise them or place them for adoption. So there's a difficult choice of not having an abortion. And then there's the difficult choice of having an abortion. What is it about abortion that you would say makes it a difficult choice?
Well, I think that what I was hoping to share is that not necessarily everything that's wrong should be illegal.
Mm. Okay. I agree with you on that. Not everything. And in fact, in the history of Catholic theology, Catholic moral theology, many saints have also said the same thing, that if you try to get the state to outlaw everything that's bad, you would live in a nightmarish state. For example, imagine if the state said it's illegal to break a promise. So like, you know, hey, I'll help you move on Saturday, and then you never show up. And then, you know, the state could come and fine you or arrest you for not helping your friend move on Saturday. I mean, that would be just nightmarish. So I agree with you that not everything that's wrong should be illegal, but things that are illegal are wrong. So some things that are wrong got to be illegal. So I guess my question for you, Lindsay, would be, how bad does something have to be before we decide to outlaw it? Like, why do we make certain things illegal?
Right.
And
I think that kind of leads to my next point on the issue.
Yeah, so it's because the music's playing, you got to wait to the top of the hour.
Well, Lindsay, if you stay with us, it'll be a bit of a little break, but if you stay with us through the next hour, I'll be happy to come back to you.
You don't have to wait an hour, though. We're coming back in
just
four minutes.
5 minutes.
Hang on a second, Lindsay. We'll get back to your call. Thank you so much for it. Why are you pro-choice today? Trent Horn is our guest. Trent is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life. Pro-choice people only, and lots of them on the line now. You all made us work to get you to call, but you're here now, and we're going to love the conversation with you when you come back. Two lines open. If you're a pro-choice person and you want to get on with Trent, 888-318-7884. Right back with more. Why are you pro-choice?